Well, I just heard the report first hour that cell phone usage long term could cause brain tumors, according to researchers here in the United States who are telling legislators this right now. In a moment, Linda Moulton Howe reports on electromagnetic fields. Hey, Linda, I know how you like good news. Are you ready for some?
I hope so.
Bob and Ryan Wood's UFO conference in November in Las Vegas?
Right.
You and I are going to do another live show there Friday night.
Oh, I am so glad. That was so fun before, and I will really look forward to doing this with you.
We're going to be in our affiliates studios, and, you know, KXNT, and I'm looking forward to it because I've not been down there.
Oh, George, that will be so fun.
Engineer right there is probably going, what? They haven't told me that yet. We're going to do that. So we'll do. And Tom's putting together the list. He'll be contacting you, and we'll get a whole group of people coming in, just like we did before.
Oh, great.
You know, quick one or two people every half hour, and we'll fill it all up that way.
So yep, I'll get it lined up, and this will be fascinating. There's going to be a lot of hot topics. So
it's that Friday, which is November 7th.
That's right.
Okay.
Very
super.
Open of the conference for those of you listening. And I think it's, isn't it called the Tuscany Suites Hotel is where we're staying?
I don't know. I don't know where the event is. Yeah, Tom says, yeah, that's where it is.
So
lots of people. They've got George Knapp, our very own George Knapp will be there. And a number of other people will be flooding at the place.
Right.
So I'm looking forward. Anyways, I just had a story about U.S. researchers saying that long-term use of cell phones, again, backing up so many other studies I've seen.
That's right.
Causes or could cause brain tumors if you use cell phones. Tell us about this report.
That's right. And the particular report you're talking about today is suggesting a 5 times more chance of having brain tumors if you have long-time cell phone exposure. Well, what we're talking about is something you cannot see it, taste it, or smell it, but it is one of the most pervasive environmental exposures in industrialized countries today. Electromagnetic radiation or electromagnetic fields are the terms that broadly describe exposures created by the vast array of wired and wireless technologies that have altered the landscape of our lives in countless beneficial ways. However, these technologies were designed to maximize energy efficiency and convenience, not with biological effects of people in mind. Based on new studies, there is growing evidence among scientists and the public about possible health risks associated with these technologies. These are words from an August 2007 report written by 14 scientists, public health, and public policy experts to document scientific evidence about electromagnetic fields and their impacts on biologies, including human brains and bodies. Maybe no one heard much about this a year ago because it's 600 pages long and it has this imposing title, Bioinitiative Report, A Rationale for a Biologically Based Public Exposure Standard for electromagnetic fields, ELF and RF. But now it's becoming more and more urgent that people understand what is in some of these reports that are increasing in number and in frequency. The scientists' bottom line in that particular bioinitiative report was essentially, quote, what is clear is that the existing public safety standards limiting these radiation levels in nearly every country of the world look to be thousands of times too lenient. Changes are needed, unquote. And that means everyone is being exposed to too much electromagnetic pollution or radiation. And at the top of the list are microwaves from microwave cell towers and cell phones. A year after that bioinitiative report, it provoked Dr. Ronald Herbermann, MD, director of the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute, to issue an unprecedented warning on July 23rd, 2008, only 2 months ago, to all of his faculty and staff, and it was entitled The Case for Precaution in the Use of Cell Phones. Dr. Herbermann's warning began, quote, electromagnetic fields generated by cell phones should be considered a potential human health risk. And at my news website, earthfiles.com, I have included his 11 warnings about cell phone use in my two-part report in entitled Growing Concern About Electromagnetic Pollution in Cell Phones. If you go to earthfiles.com, at the top of the Earth Files headline page is a hot link to these very important reports. Dr. Herbermann's warning list boils down to this. Use cell phones as little as possible and always with a headset. Don't keep them in a shirt or pants pocket. Don't keep a Bluetooth in power mode next to your ear or your head, and keep all cell phones away from children and infants who are the most vulnerable to electromagnetic radiation. Only 2 months after Dr. Herbermann's warnings, the director of the Center for Reproductive Medicine at the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio this month released his second cell phone study. Dr. Ashok Agarwal, PhD, warns that men who use hands-free devices tend to carry their cell phones in their pants pocket or clipped to their belts at the waist while in talk mode. As a result, they may be exposing their testicles to damaging radio frequency electromagnetic waves. And Dr. Agarwal says, quote, the Bluetooth devices which many people are using these days because of health or safety concerns might not be so safe. Don't leave them powered on, unquote. In another study, Dr. Agarwal found that 361 men who use their cell phones more than 4 hours a day had significantly lower sperm quality than those who use their cell phones for less time. Joining a growing chorus of medical warnings about electromagnetic pollution and the dangers of too much cell phone use is Deborah Davis, PhD. Since 2004, Dr. Davis has been the director of the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute Center for Environmental Oncology, and she is professor of epidemiology in the Graduate School of Public Health. Dr. Davis is also author of the 2007 acclaimed book, The Secret History of the War on Cancer. In the 1990s, Dr. Davis was director of the Board on Environmental Studies in Toxicology at the National Academy of Sciences and was a Clinton administration appointee to the National Chemical Safety and Hazard Investigation Board. Recently, I talked with Dr. Davis about the Pittsburgh cell phone warning memo distributed in her institution in July to the Cancer Institute's faculty and staff. And here now is Dr. Davis.
The focus of our effort has been to advise our staff to take precautions so that they can reduce their direct exposure to their brain.
It is sobering to read this memo, to see the precautions that you all who are experts in the field of oncology are putting out to your own colleagues.
Yes. And really, let me just say that neither Dr. Herbermann nor I ever imagined that an internal advisory memo to our staff would get global attention it has received. We were doing this simply because we spent about 8 months reviewing the literature on a number of environmental hazards, where we concluded that there needed to be advice given to the scientific staff so that people could take appropriate precautions. It's important to realize that the cell phone industry itself has reported that the cell signal reaches through the brain of children, and I'm very, very concerned about this attempt to market cell phones to toddlers, to young children, as something they should wear around their neck, because living tissue is vulnerable to electromagnetic fields. There is some evidence of an increase in brain tumors in those studies that have been done in countries like Sweden, where cell phones have been used long enough to see an effect. And our concern is not just with cancer, but we know that the brain of children continues to develop and mature in various ways throughout the teenage years. And Dr. Leonard Hardell is a distinguished oncologist and epidemiologist in Sweden at the University Hospital, and he has published a series of important papers which have found when you look at people who have used cell phones for 10 years or more, they have a substantial increase, a doubled increase or more, of a tumor of the hearing nerve called acoustic neuroma, which is generally a benign tumor that can be surgically removed. And they also have an increase in a type of brain tumor, unfortunately a glioma, that shows up particularly on the same side of the head that persons report using their cell phones with.
And when you realize that the public is constantly being told by people in political authority that there is no evidence of risk to human health, you can understand the confusion that the public has about whether cell phones and microwave towers are safe or not.
I do, and I think it's very important to take a step back and recognize something. Human evidence should not be the requirement for action to prevent further human harm. If we say we have to have proof that people are already sick or dead because of long-term exposure to radio frequency signals, we are basically dooming our children and grandchildren, treating them like experimental rats where we don't really have controls. I think we need to make better reliance on experimental studies, which scientists have done in culture dishes, where we take cultures of cells from the brain, which has been done, cultures of breast cells and prostate cells, and expose them in the laboratory under controlled conditions to these signals and see what happens to them. And those studies have been done, and in 2007, an analysis of that work was reported by the Bioinitiative report, prepared and edited by Dr. David Carpenter, the former dean of the University at Albany's School of Public Health, and Cindy Sage, who is an expert in this field as well. And that report, put together by 15 renowned international scientists, reported on the negative and positive studies and concluded that there was sufficient evidence for concern and precautionary actions to be taken. And I think at this point, we are not calling for people to stop using cell phones. We are calling for them to use them more safely, particularly because many health professionals are literally tied to their cell phones at their hip, and we advise against that. And we think it's important for people's mental and physical health to actually turn your phone off sometimes. Dinner times, it's a good idea, as well as at night. Some people actually were sleeping with the phone under their pillow. That's not a good idea.
And on September 18th, there was a report on CNN. This is the headline: cell phones can affect sperm quality, researcher says. And this is work at the Cleveland Clinic, quote, on average, there was an 85% increase in the amount of free radicals for all the subjects in the study. Free radicals have been linked to a variety of diseases in humans, including cancer. Free radicals have been linked to decreased sperm quality in previous studies. They also found in another study that men who use their cell phones more than 4 hours a day had significantly lower sperm quality than those who use their cell phones for less time. He is saying they need to do more research, but isn't this reinforcing what you are telling me?
Absolutely. In fact, here's what we understand. Dr. Agarwal's work is very, very important. We have to be concerned because there are growing numbers of young people with cancer. There is clear evidence that we have more survivors of cancer because we have succeeded in treating cancers of childhood, but we're seeing more cancer in young people under the age of 40, more than 1 million cancer survivors today. One of the most common malignancies in young people is testicular cancer. It is well known that anything that can cause deformities of the sperm may also cause testicular cancer. We're flying blind in respect to a lot of these questions because we don't have access to data from industry. And because of national security, cell phone companies now have to turn over records to the government of cell phone use for anyone who is suspected of being involved in endangering the United States. We think that our security is at risk, and we are calling on the cell phone industries in the testimony that Dr. Herberman will issue on Friday to cooperate with independent researchers at MD Anderson and at the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute and at the University of California at San Francisco to release billing records so that we can tie those to detailed information that we need about use patterns from people in order to do a prospective study. If there is a risk that appears to be evolving here of brain tumors, we now have the following situation. More than 90% of people in most industrial countries are currently using cell phones. 10 years ago, it was less than 30%, except in Scandinavia, where we have studies that have been positive. So if we wait until we have human evidence, we are going to be in big trouble.
It would be an epidemic, possibly, of brain tumors and problems with sperm increasing over the next 10 to 20 years.
Yes. Frankly, this is a real dilemma for public health. We think there's enough cause for concern right now that we advise taking precaution, and we think everybody should change their use of cell phones now. We think it's a good idea for people not to keep their cell phones on their body all the time. We think it's a good idea that if you use a cell phone, try to shorten the amount of time you use it. Do not have it directly at your head, if at all possible. Use a wired headpiece or, for short periods of time, a Bluetooth headset. But don't keep a Bluetooth headset on all the time, because even though its transmission is lower, if it's on all the time, then you are getting more exposure. Do not have your cell phone on and on your body at all times. Do not put it under your pillow.
And apparently don't carry it in your pocket.
And don't carry it in your pocket or put it on your hip when it's on. The thing that's amazing is you can actually turn cell phones off. And people, we have become so addicted to using them that people don't realize you can actually turn your cell phone off.
Tomorrow, which is September 26th, Dr. Davis is going to be joining Dr. Herbermann and many other oncologists and medical specialists in Washington, D.C. for a congressional subcommittee meeting on the dangers now of cell phones and microwave tower dangers. And at the bottom of my two-part Earth Files report, I show some photographs, George, of camouflaged microwave towers now that are being designed to conceal them so that because they know that people don't want them close to their schools or where they live. And you look at these photos, one looks exactly like an American flag.
They look like trees, everything. It's strange.
Yeah, one is exactly like a farm grain silo. And there is something very important. In addition to this subcommittee meeting tomorrow, the telecommunications industry is trying to stop all citizen influence on restricting microwave cell tower sites. This is a big deal for the public to get into this and try to communicate with your representatives, with your senators, now, by phone, by email, by letter. And if you go to my Earth Files, my two-part report, Growing Concern About Electromagnetic Pollution and Cell Phones, I have at the bottom of both of those reports the steps for what you can do to communicate with the FCC, who is having a hearing right now in which the public could be taken even more so out of how microwave towers are built, where they are built. And I think every citizen should be urged to try to get into this and have some influence about what is happening with microwave tower sites.
What do you have in store for us next half hour, Linda?
It is a story about something that I am almost sorry to report about, but I feel it is vital that everyone know that half cats and other animal mutilations continue to occur around the world. And right now, there is a terrible series of them east of Palm Springs, California. And we'll be hearing from a woman who just this month lost one of her cats.
God, I don't know what's going on in that arena either. I mean, if it's all over the planet, there's something big.
Been all over the planet since at least the 1940s.
Stick with us. Linda Moulton Howe will be next with this report on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, it's called Conversations with Linda. We're going to take your phone calls with Linda Moulton Howe. Hey, I've got some really exciting news for you. We are doing a major revamp of the coasttocoastam.com website, long overdue, and I saw the prototype today, and it just looks great. But we're still going to make some changes. We're going to make some adjustments. And one thing we're going to be giving you is a free newsletter. Absolutely. I don't know how often it'll come out. Could come out daily. Could come out once a week. I'm not sure yet. But it is free for you to sign up. And it will be free for you for as long as you want to get it. And I think you'll enjoy that. But when you do sign up at the time, and we're not ready to put it out there on our website yet for you to start signing up for it, and it'll tell you things about Coast to Coast and just some nice tidbits and stories, But when you do sign up, we're going to ask you to look at the prototype of the website and offer us some of your ideas and suggestions before we implement it and put it into final stage. So the newsletter is going to be free. We'll have a nice name for it for you and everything else. It's not to be confused with the After Dark magazine. That's separate. That's part of Coast to Coast. That's a subscription base. That's a full-color magazine. This is just a little internet email newsletter you're going to get. But you sign up for it, and it's absolutely free. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. Linda Moltenhau. Very disturbing story. More animal mutilations. Linda, you've been covering these stories for years now. Have you come up with your own personal theory yet?
Well, I have reported on Coast over the years and in my books and my documentaries and television programs and probably 100 stories now at Earth Files. And all of it is based from my very beginning investigation with law enforcement back in 1979 in Colorado. It was law enforcement who said, Linda, we're dealing with creatures from outer space. They had seen beams of light in pastures. They had seen orange glowing fiery spheres go down into the ground, come up out of the ground, split into in the sky. I was astonished at what I was hearing from law enforcement back in 1979. And when Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso in 1997 came out with his very, very important book, The Day After Roswell, fortunately, the year before he died in 1998, and says for pages that he had seen documents about the killing and mutilating of animals around the world when he worked in the Pentagon. He was working for General Arthur Trudeau, handpicked by Eisenhower. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. He doesn't qualify. That law enforcement never qualified. They say we're dealing. Lieutenant Colonel Philip Corso said, we're dealing with extraterrestrial biological entities who are the perpetrators.
What a story. Well, tell us about this case, Linda.
And now what I'm going to go into tonight is slightly a different facet, and I cannot say for sure who the perpetrators are, but the modus operandi is so similar as to what has happened with the large animals that when you come down to half cats and dogs and rabbits and smaller animals, and it's still bloodless and trackless, is it caused by the same perpetrators? I leave that with a question mark. And I think of this as I have now talked about honeybees, I have talked about electromagnetic pollution, and I think of both of those as environmental assaults that are out there. And this is an environmental assault. And it's not pleasant to report about, but I think it is very important for all of us to not bury our heads in the sand and turn away from subjects that are unpleasant. We need to know what is happening on this planet, especially if the perpetrators are extraterrestrial biological entities, as Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso said for sure on the larger animal mutilations. Well, I'm going tonight. I thought I would start with kind of a brief overview of such reports that are now being discussed in newspapers, TV, radio, basically in both hemispheres, involving mutilated half cats, sometimes dogs, rabbits, horses, cows, all around the world, and even koala bears in this report, and in the past I have reported about the same thing happening to kangaroos.
Okay.
Now, first, German rabbits. On Monday, June 9th of this year, the owner of two rabbits in Witten, Dortmund, which is in the German Ruhr Valley, found one of his pets gone and the other was headless. That's a variation on this theme. The wave of German rabbit mutilations began in October 2007, about 1 year ago, and then for some reason, they began increasing in May of 2008. The total right now that's being reported to the media by law enforcement is 40 rabbits have been beheaded or cut up in odd, bloodless ways, no signs of blood. And the police task force spokesman told the UK independent newspaper, quote, we have a number of officers working on this case, and we are carrying out exhaustive investigations, but we have no idea who is doing this. We are still in the dark, and this is after a year and 40 of these strangely mutilated rabbits. From Germany across the Northern Hemisphere to Esterhazy, Saskatchewan in Canada, also the same month, June 2008, a cow was found dead and bloodlessly mutilated, missing its ear, eye, tongue, jaw, flesh, genitals, and rectum cord out. That's the standard classic large animal mutilation.
Jeez.
And not long after that one, and some miles away in Lloydminster, Saskatchewan, another cow was found dead and mutilated. By July 1st, a cat in Rutland, British Columbia, that's in Canada also, was found bloodlessly cut in half. It was one of a dozen mutilated cats found in Rutland since 2004. No one has ever been arrested and arraigned. 3 days later, on July 4th in northeastern Dallas, Texas, a cat was found, quote, slit from neck to between its back legs, a very precise cut, unquote. All the internal organs had been removed without blood anywhere on that cat. Back in Canada in the first half of July, the fourth cat mutilation since 2006 was found in Kingston, Ontario, while the sixth mutilated cat was found in Palm Springs, California, prompting the Riverside County Sheriff's Office to declare the bloodlessly mutilated cats as, quote, unusual and weird, unquote, and more about these half cats in a moment. On July 7th, a pet Chihuahua dog was found cut in half bloodlessly. And the next day, on July 8th, in St. Petersburg, Florida, a 10-year-old cat was found with a straight razor-sharp cut from its throat down without blood, which is very similar to the cat in Dallas, Texas. The next day, on July 8th, in Corpus Christi, Texas, the third cat in 1 month was found cut precisely in half without blood. And by August 2008, the number of mutilated half cats in Corpus Christi had increased to 13. On August 21st, the Arizona Department of Agriculture investigated the unusual deaths of 40 head of cattle that all died grazing in the same pasture in Chino Valley. More than 150 other cattle were in the same pasture unharmed. To date, the cause of the cattle deaths has not been reported. On August 22nd, at Clear Mountain, northwest of Brisbane, Australia, a 4-year-old koala bear was found with its abdomen cut open bloodlessly, nothing on the hair. Earlier in August, a baby koala was also found dead and mutilated. In early September of this month in Norwood, Missouri, farmer Galen Jones found one of his cows dead and mutilated, as he has now often seen. Mr. Jones has had about 24 cattle mutilations since the mid-1990s. No blood, no track evidence. And Wright County Sheriff Glenn Adler said about this most recent one how puzzled he is about the precision of the excisions. He said, quote, it was just like a round, perfect circle where the mutilators had taken the udder off, unquote. Well, that's what I have seen myself in dozens of cases that I've investigated in field research over the past 3 decades. And so now, right now, between June of 2008 and September of 2008, around the world, there have been mutilated rabbits, cows, cats, dog, and koala bears, all unusual animal deaths. But one of the saddest interviews that I have ever done was this month of September, with a woman living in a gated condominium community about a half hour east of Palm Springs, California. That town is called Bermuda Dunes. Helen Carey is a retired dental lab technician and has lived in her condo for 7 years with a male friend and her cat named Patches. Patches was a house cat, but sometimes after dinner she wanted outside. Usually she would come back to sleep for the night. Once in a while, she would stay out all night and come running in the morning for her food and water. Patches had stayed out the night of September 9th, but by the afternoon of Wednesday, September 10th, Patches had not returned and Helen was worried. And one of her neighbor friends found the front half of Patches lying in a central courtyard of grass. There was no blood on the fur, no hair on the grass, no other body parts anywhere, only the clean, empty upper half of Patrick. A week later, I talked with Helen Carey, who was still very upset and periodically cried, but told me that she wanted to speak up in her name in hopes that my Earth Files and Coast broadcast might help others come forward with more information that might, she hopes, solve the cat mutilators, who they are and why. Here now is Helen Carey.
And I don't mind you recording me, but right now I'm still having a difficult time. It was only been a week ago today.
Had Patches been gone all night?
Yes. Well, she was out all night. My friend that I live with, he had put her out at 9:30, which is kind of late. She normally goes out right after dinner and then wants to come in. That next morning on the 10th, she didn't, you know, she always comes home. She's always outside waiting to get in and eat and drink of water. And after a couple hours, I kind of feared looking for her. We looked everywhere where we thought she would be. I mean, all I had to do was whistle and she'd always come running. Darlene had taken her chihuahua out and she walked around the corner and thought she saw a cat. She thought it was asleep, just laying resting. And then, of course, she walked up and saw her condition. And she went and asked her mom and described the cat to her. And they knew it was mine because everybody knew Patches.
You then went to look.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at the front half and you called
the La Quinta Police Department.
When they came, did they talk about other cases that they have investigated this year?
Yes.
What did they say?
Well, they said that it's not the first they've found in the similar cases where they think that the person is taking the cat and killing it first and then mutilating it.
Was it returned to your yard or a neighbor's yard?
Well, it was just two condos down from me. It's in the, you know, we all share same yard, but she was in our same big yard that goes around the condos. There's 13 units.
Did everybody let their animals out there every day?
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, the people with dogs for pets, they'd always have them on a leash. And, you know, I've heard of other neighbors letting their cats out in Patches. She always wanted to go out after dinner. Sometimes she didn't come in until the next morning. She'd stay out all night. And she was born wild. She was a feral cat, and she had that streak in her. I was concerned, but I never really heard anything until the first of the year when they were talking about somebody doing this to cats. And I just didn't think she'd ever, she was afraid of people, and she was fast and strong, and I don't know, I guess you never think it's going to happen to you. But the deputies, when they came, that's the first thing, that, oh, this wasn't a coyote. It was too clean. And, you know, when I picked her up and put her in a box to bring her to where I live, there was just a little bit of blood. We looked around for the remains, and we couldn't find anything.
So it was only the front half of the cat without blood and no other part of the cat around on the grass.
Right. The officer said it looked like it was a clean cut across her chest, her breast.
Through the spine.
Yes. Darlene and I both walked around all the back and in the front, just trying to find some other part of her and see if we both were looking. We didn't see anything, but, I mean, there wasn't even any hair. You know, around, if there's a struggle, there'd be cat hair. If it would have been a coyote eating, it would have pulled off the hair and left hair balls or something like that. But no, and then 2 days later in the morning, I kept looking out the patio door and I just saw something laying by the pool gate. So sure enough, it was Patch's collar, and it does have a charm on it. It wasn't heavy for her, but it was, wind wouldn't be able to pick it up and blow it, I don't believe.
Well, it's very strange that 2 days after the cat would have been found in its half-cat condition, two doors down from you, that then 2 more days later, the collar that was missing when it was found would then be laid down near a gate. But the police made it very clear that upon finding the chest bone cut in two, this is not something that a coyote could do.
Well, that's when they said it was just such a clean cut, and they were so certain. And then when I did talk to the investigator that I was supposed to call, I talked to him the next day, and he kept in touch all day. And I guess they changed what they said, because they took pictures all around where she was before I picked her up. And, you know, they even noticed that there wasn't any hair around.
And no blood on Patch's own fur.
No, they just said it was really clean, and her insides, her organs were gone. When the vet did the autopsy on her, she called the investigator, and he called me and said that Patches did have a broken leg. So if she was trying to get away, she couldn't because she had a broken leg. And they suggested that she might have gotten hit by a golf cart or a car or something.
Is it possible that she could have been dropped from above to the ground?
Oh, I don't know.
And how have the police left this investigation with you now?
Pretty much they put it as a coyote attack. After talking to the vet, she told them that she was 99.9 sure that it had been a coyote.
Hard to believe.
Well, yes. And then the gal, Darlene, that was so helpful for me that day, that she talks to everybody around here, and she knows the other people that have had problems, and they were telling her if it would have been a coyote, they don't leave anything. They take it with them. They don't normally leave parts behind. When the deputies were here, they were quite sure, as they made me certain, that it had been someone and not a coyote. And Darlene was saying, well, the animal control, they don't want to do the paperwork. They'd rather just say it's a coyote and get it over with. That's what she said other people are saying around here, too, that they don't want to go through all the paperwork.
And, George, I have run into this, we'll call it the change in authorities' perspective so many times, where law enforcement on the scene will say this is definitely not coyote or predator, this is an instrument of some kind. And then within 3 or 4 or 5 days after a story, if it makes it to the public, you will hear somebody saying, oh no, we have confirmed coyote. And this was the frustration that I was facing back in the 1980s when I was able to work with the hematologist and pathologist, Dr. John Altshuler in Denver, who, God rest him, has passed on. But we were able to work on many cases together, and several were half cats up in Vancouver on the BC side of things. And in one of those cats, he talked with the coroner's office that was working, or the veterinarian's office that was working on the necropsies of the cat. And we got one, and he found the entire excision halfway through the cat. The cat had been cut in half, had been done with high heat.
What a mystery. Stick around with Linda Moulton Howe and Conversations with Linda and your calls when we come right back.